Hello, smart car buyers, and welcome to September's episode. I hope you've all been enjoying our latest recap, and hopefully this is showing back up in your feed once again for a great podcast that you listen to. By now, you probably have heard or seen, witnessed, or experienced the extreme huge amount of press coverage about electric vehicles. And yes, it seems like everything and everyone is going electric, from bicycles to passenger vans, all the way to rumors of electric airplanes, helicopters, and other vehicles like that. We've seen companies like Tesla come out with huge, massive semis, all electric. And it seems that the transition to go electric is becoming all the rage. Now, I've seen a lot of funny posts and heard a lot of pushback from people who are diehard gasoline-powered car fans. And I get it. As a car lover, a lover of that machine, someone who's been in the automotive industry for a very long time, I too love the good old-fashioned gasoline-powered vehicle. You may have heard the term ICE vehicle and might be wondering what that is. That's just internal combustion engine. That's just short for that. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about some myths of electric vehicles because I see a lot of false information out there being spread throughout social media. And there's so many diehard fans that people are starting to believe and actually promote some of these myths. And whether you do actually believe them or not, that really depends kind of on your preference. But there are some actual facts that you need to know to make sure that your claims are legitimate and not just the fascinations of fanboys. So let's get started and talk about the myths of electric vehicles. Now, I'm going to read a lot of statistics and a lot of facts coming straight from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA. These are things that are kind of their top six myths that are going around the globe that so many people are so adamant to promote very, very quickly. The first myth is that electric vehicles are worse for the climate than gasoline cars because of the power plant emissions. I'll go a little bit further to add to that and say that others have also made this same claim, not so much about power plants, and the power plants are being the facilities that are actually creating the batteries, but others talk about the minerals that you have to actually dig up and destroy the earth to mine these rare gems or rare ingredients to create the batteries as well. We've seen multiple people, or you've seen multiple people that have probably posted these massive holes where people are mining for things to make lithium. And it goes a little further to say that actually creating this lithium at these power plants is also destroying the earth. Here's what the EPA says. Fact. Electric vehicles typically have a smaller carbon footprint than gasoline cars, even when accounting for the electricity used for charging. Now, that goes also into other different things beyond just the consumption of fossil fuels. That goes into actually how the burning of those fossil fuels are destroying the earth, not just the mining of them. They go a little bit further here to say electric vehicles, or EVs, have no tailpipe emissions, generating the electricity used to charge EVs. However, they may create carbon pollution, or those things that create carbon pollution. The amount varies widely based on how local power is generated. Example, using coal or natural gas, which emit carbon pollution, versus renewable resources like wind or solar, which do not. Even accounting for these electricity emissions, research shows that an EV is typically responsible for lower levels of greenhouse gases, GHGs, than an average new gasoline car. The extent that more renewable energy sources like wind and solar are used to generate electricity, the total GHGs associated with EVs could be even lower. In 2020, renewables became the second most prevalent U.S. electricity source. Again, that was in 2020. They also put that you can learn more about production in your local area by visiting EPA's power profiler and that sort of thing. There's a little bit more down here below this, and it says EPA and DOE's Beyond Tailpipe Emissions Calculator can help you estimate the greenhouse gas emissions associated with charging and driving an EV or plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, PHEV, where you live. You can select EV or PHEV models and type in your zip code to see the CO2 emissions and how they stack up against those associated with a gasoline car. All right, so now we've got all that out of the way. We want to talk a little bit about this and kind of break this down, right? And try not to get too in-depth about it. I'm not a scientist. I'm definitely not a lab rat. I'm not someone who knows all the science and everything that goes behind it. But what I can tell you is that since 2020, since this whole push and start of the actual, what I call EV revolution, electric vehicle revolution has began, we have seen test after test after test prove that the carbon footprint, that's meaning how much CO2 the earth is depleted, I guess you can say, or is used by a normal car. We'll just call it a normal gasoline car versus an EV. And they're taking into the fact of charging, the electricity that it takes to produce this energy, where it comes from, et cetera, et cetera. And like they're saying here, that varies dependent on region. There are certain regions that use solar power and wind turbines to actually charge electric vehicles or power electric vehicle charging stations. So they're not actually using a power plant to create this. Other areas are, and that's where they have this calculator that can show you versus a regular powered vehicle how much CO2 is being used, because that's really what we're worried about. The greenhouse effect, global warming, and now they've moved on from calling it global warming to just calling it climate change, because we're noticing that it's not just global warming, it's now rain, it's now heat waves, all this kind of stuff. And they're saying it's mostly produced from this greenhouse gas effect that's coming from the use of CO2. So we're trying to cut out that CO2 carbon emissions, that footprint that vehicles are making. And vehicles make up the most of it, obviously. So without getting too far into this, and I'm sure there's plenty of people that are probably picking this apart, I'm trying to be very general here and go with just kind of what we have, because this could be a conversation that could be up for debate, that could be on trial, that smarter people than I, but this is kind of for me to help you look at some of those myths that are out there and overlook them. While, yes, it's not a complete cure, it's not a complete total 100% answer, electric vehicles now have been on the road for over a decade. And prior to that, back at the turn of the century, before we even had gasoline-powered cars, we were flirting with the idea of electric vehicles. Some of the issues that we still have with electric vehicles were prevalent then as well, and we are rapidly overcoming those issues, and we'll get into some of those in a little bit. But basically, this myth of electric vehicles are worse for the climate than gasoline cars is definitely a myth. While they are better, they're not completely 100% without without their issues as well. There are places where solar and wind turbines aren't being used, or some other form of method to help power these charging stations, and a power plant is used in that. It's still less than hundreds of thousands of cars being on the road. Not, I, it, every area is going to be different. But this is definitely a myth that they're worse. They're not worse. They're definitely better. Is there still cause for concern here? Absolutely. But it is a step in the right direction when it comes to worrying about which one is better for the climate. So let's move on here. We'll take a quick little break and we'll come and talk about the number two myth, which is electric vehicles don't have enough range to handle daily travel demands. All right, so let's get right into myth number two. And myth number two, I'm going to tell you, is probably one that I'm going to spend a lot more time on than I've spent on other myths that we have here. And that is electric vehicles don't have enough range to handle daily travel demands. The fact that they give here, electric vehicle range is more than enough for typical daily use in the U.S. EVs have significant range to cover a typical household daily travel, which is approximately 50 miles on average per day. The majority of households, roughly 85%, travel under 100 miles on a typical day. Most EVs go above 200 miles on a fully charged battery, with nearly all new models traveling more than 100 miles on a single charge. And automakers have announced plans to release even more long-range models in the coming years. Now, they have a little disclaimer at the bottom here that I'm going to read, and then we're going to unpack all this. How you drive your vehicle and the driving conditions, including hot and cold weather, also affect the range of electric vehicles. For instance, researchers have found, on average, that decrease could be about 40% due to cold temperatures or the use of heat. And they give their links and everything so that you can go analyze this for yourself. So let's unpack all this, okay? Because there is some truth here, and then there is some cause for concern. So the fact that electric vehicle range is more than enough for the typical daily use in the U.S., and they're focusing on daily use, I would agree with them. And I think that they are being absolutely 100% correct, that most of us are not doing over 100 miles a day. They say roughly 85%. I would say that's probably true. Most of us are not traveling over 100 miles a day. And yes, most EVs most models go above 200 miles. And that's true. They are rated to go over 200 miles on a single charge. However, we know that not just heat and cold, which they put in here, but anything else can really determine and actually decrease that maximum range, from towing to the amount of occupants that are in the vehicle. If you're hauling anything, even, you know, if you have heavy items in your trunk or whatever, heat, lots of hills, those sort of things, all of this stuff can really affect that maximum rated range. And that has been one of the biggest drawbacks that I have. However, I also see more and more charging stations popping up. No, they're not fast right now. Yes, they are in high demand, especially if you're on a long trip. I can tell you recently I took a trip that was about 6 hours. We did stop at two gas stations. Both stations, or stations along the way that we saw, did have charging ports. Granted, even with a supercharger now, your typical car, even if it's not completely empty, is going to take anywhere from 25 to 45 minutes to fully charge. You may not need a full charge, but I think most of us, our biggest concern is range anxiety. What do we do if we run out of battery, we have to get a tow, and then we have to find somewhere to charge, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot to worry here. But, and I say that because most of us, if we're going to stop and charge, we're going to top off, right? But the cost savings, I think, outweigh the I guess you can call it a disadvantage or the headache or the inconvenience of having to wait a little bit longer. Most people tell me that typically on average, the normal person, when they stop for fuel, they're spending at least 10 to 15 minutes at a gas station. That's if you're just pumping at the pump. Now, I think those times are coming from if you are filling up from empty, because most people drive their cars to empty. On long trips, you're typically spending a little bit longer at a gas station because of the fact that you've been sitting for a while. So you kind of want to get up and move around a little bit and stretch your legs and that sort of thing. For those that want to make that argument, I would say companies like Buc-ee's are becoming some of the biggest fueling stations or gas stations in the world because of the fact that on these long trips, when you stop to get gas, you do want to kind of walk around and stretch your legs and kind of get your blood flowing a little bit, so much so that they have areas that you can shop and that you can eat and that you can just roam around this massive fueling station, this massive gas station for 30, 45 minutes. That's plenty of time to charge a normal EV nowadays if you're using a fast charger. Plus, it's a lot cheaper to fully top off and charge. That being said, if you're a person who doesn't stop a lot, if you're someone that typically does a 6-hour drive with one stop, EVs are definitely going to hinder your typical long range of driving. If you're able to actually sit for 2 to 3 of those hours and you've got enough fuel to make it that long of a distance, you definitely are going to run into issues. Another one is, I thought about, what do I do if I go to see my parents who live 2.5 hours away? Well, in those sort of scenarios, I know that I'm going for longer than just 45 minutes. So in that scenario, it would not be very hard for you to take a plug-in charger and actually plug in. I think that most people will not find themselves in a situation where they get somewhere like that, that they know that they're going to be somewhere for a few hours and not be able to plug in to where they're at. Sure, you can make up all sorts of scenarios to counter that argument, but for the most part, yes, they are true. But for me, the inconvenience of just wanting to be able to take a long range trip and know that I've got to plan around a charger. There are parts of this country that are very rural, that are long stretches of highways that are several hundred miles, that there's no civilization whatsoever, much less it's some kind of charging station. And I know that there's so much that's in the works to try to get all of that changed so that we can take electric vehicles anywhere and charge them anywhere. But at the moment, and I think everyone's biggest complaint is that there is not enough infrastructure that supports all EVs. And we've heard multiple scenarios and cases where people would pull up to a charger and it was the charger that they had on their map that they had to get some charge at, some fuel, that being electricity, into their car, and they're not working and they have to call the number that's on there and customer service this and that and the other, and it cost them, you know, a few hours. Those are rare circumstances as well, and I know those are headaches. I know those are concerns. I know those are things that people are just really, really worried about. And yes, we are in the beginning stages of working all of this out. Even with electric vehicles being around for such a long time now, we are just now getting to the point where it is becoming a major concern. It is becoming a major focus, and people are starting to adjust everywhere for electric vehicles, but we're not quite there yet, in my opinion. But yes, this is a myth. I think that, you know, typically, yes, you're going to drive, you know, 40, 50 miles a day, maybe 65, but most of us are not driving 100 or 110 or 115 miles a day, even if you are an on-the-road salesperson. My mother was one for several years, and she only did about 65 or 75 miles a day And that is in a very rural area where I live, where, you know, she would have clients in multiple counties out in the middle of very rural woodsy areas and things like that. And she still didn't travel as much as the typical person does. So I think that that's an area that used to be a very big concern that is not so much a big concern anymore. But I do think that it is probably one of the biggest major concerns, and that if the automakers of electric vehicles can start getting an average distance of 300, 350, 400, I think if we can break and get into that area of range, I think you'll see more of an adoption over to EVs. All right, so we're going to move along a little bit faster here. Myth number three and myth number five are kind of short myths, and myth number four is kind of something we've already kind of talked about. So these next three, I'm going to kind of go through all of them here in this one little section. And myth number three is kind of obvious. Electric vehicles only come as sedans. We all know that that's incorrect. That, as their fact states, electric vehicles now come in a variety of shapes and sizes. And we see that. We have electric trucks, pickup trucks, small trucks, SUVs, the whole nine yards. So we know that that is definitely a myth. Myth number four says there is nowhere to charge. And granted, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that was an issue where it was really, really hard to find charging stations. Nowadays, that is definitely not the case. There are multiple charging stations all over the U.S. with multiple grids. Many of these electric vehicles come with maps built into them that will show you where these charging stations are. Lots and lots of very smart people, strategic planning, have put charging along most of our national highways and byways, all along all major interstates and highways in the U.S., with very, very few places, mostly being rural areas, that are absent. But we're seeing more and more of those pop up every day. Their fact here on this one, there's nowhere to charge, is electric vehicles can be plugged into the same type of outlets as your toaster, which is correct. When you need to charge while you're on the road, you'll find over 45,000, I think that's over 50,000 now since this has been published, stations in the U.S. available to the public. They go on to state many people can meet their driving needs by plugging in only at home. Most electric vehicles can be charged with the standard 120 volt level one outlet. To charge the vehicle more quickly, you can install a dedicated 240 volt level two outlet or charging system. And for those who live in apartments and condominiums, EV charging stations are becoming more and more common among building amenities. Workplace charging is also becoming more widely available, and there are growing numbers of public charging stations available to you. I can tell you that for many, many years, almost probably 10 years now, we have a local outlet mall. And it started out, it had about 7 or 8 charging stations. Now I think they have over a dozen. And it just shows the progress that's been made. So this isn't a new thing. This is something that's been happening. It's really funny when you live in a rural area. One of the biggest uproars that recently happened was there was a gas station at a local Walmart that was torn down and replaced with charging stations. It was very funny to see the reactions of people after that. Myth number five, and this is something that we'll dive into a little bit more. I won't just brush through this one, but it is a little bit shorter to kind of talk about. But it says electric vehicles are worse for the climate than gasoline cars because of battery manufacturing. And we talked about that a little bit in myth number one, and I want to focus on it a little bit more here. And it says the greenhouse gas emissions associated with an electric vehicle over its lifetime are typically lower than those from an average gasoline-powered vehicle, even when accounting for manufacturing. And I 100% cannot get people to understand this. It is absolutely 100% true. Yes, there is a footprint here when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions for the creation of the battery as well as the charging of the battery in the future. However, it is so much smaller, and that's the step in the right direction. It's not completely curing it, and we're not saying that greenhouse gas emissions associated with electric vehicles are completely gone, that they're solving the problems. But if you think about it, most of us on a vehicle at least 4 years, unless you're leasing a vehicle, and then you're still owning at least 2 to 3 years prior to that. But most of us are keeping vehicles longer nowadays because vehicles are actually lasting longer. Most of us are seeing vehicles that will last you 5, 6, 7, 8 years before needing any kind of major maintenance outside of typical maintenance like oil change, tires, brakes, batteries. With an electric vehicle, we're seeing even better than that. If you take into the account that with an electric vehicle, you have no more oil changes, you have no more of your typical fuel system problems. Some of the major things that you take into accountability, especially with luxury vehicles, is the high rising cost of typical maintenance. While many people will try to argue that and say, well, yeah, but if your battery goes out, then it's very expensive. It is, but you got to think of the battery of an electric vehicle being the same as the motor of a typical gasoline-powered engine. And if your motor crapped out in your car right now, you would be out tens of thousands of dollars to have a dealership or a shop replace that. The same is true with an electric vehicle. However, we're seeing vehicles now that have been out over 10 years with these batteries, and they're not going out. We can't say the same for current manufacturers who some of their cars have not even made it 6 years without needing major mechanical issues that cost you several thousands of dollars. That being said, the longevity of these cars growing and growing and growing to where they last longer and longer and longer over time, and the batteries lasting longer and longer in time, help this carbon footprint. They help this greenhouse gas emissions. They help with the CO2 emissions. They're going to ultimately be the thing that helps our environment become less and less chaotic. Hopefully, that's the hope. That's the goal. So yes, I think that these three are sort of kind of myths. I think one of the big things that people try to say is electric vehicles are worse for the climate than gasoline cars because of battery manufacturing. Or if we go back to number one, talking about the power plants that produce the energy to charge these cars. No one is saying the electric cars, the government, everyone that's pushing for electric vehicles, they're not saying that there is no harm to the climate. They're saying it's a considerable amount less harm. And that's a step in the right direction. We want to get to where we're not harming the planet at all with what we're driving, our modes of transportation. But the step in the right direction is to reduce the amount of harm that we have going on right now. So these three myths, I think, are pretty self-explanatory, pretty easy. Most of us can go, yeah, that's not true. But that last one, that fifth one, is kind of one that we really, really want to focus on. So let me read a little bit more here of the facts that they have. It says, some studies have shown that making a typical electric vehicle can create more carbon pollution than making a gasoline car. This is because of the additional energy required to manufacture an EV's battery, just like we talked about. However, and this is kind of what I'm getting at here as well, over the lifetime of the vehicle, total greenhouse gas, GHG, total greenhouse gas emissions associated with manufacturing, charging, and driving the car are typically lower, not completely gone, but lower than the total GHG associated with gasoline cars, because you do still have a lot of the same carbon pollution that's happening with regular cars to create them is also happening with EVs. But when you factor in the whole lifespan of the car, the creation, the charging, the driving versus the creation, the driving, the repair, you get what I'm saying? You have less. The key word there is less carbon pollution with an EV car than you do with a regular gas-powered car. Here's their example that they give. ARG9 National Laboratory estimated emissions for both gasoline cars and EVs with a 300-mile electric range. In their estimate, the GHG emissions from an EV manufacturing and end of life are higher, shown in orange below, and they have a chart here. Total GHGs for the EV are still lower than those for gasoline cars. So when you go down here and you look at it, yes, the initial production, okay, I'll break this down. The initial production of an EV's battery is, and this is how it stacks up. They've got them side by side here. So if you're looking at the GHGs for electric vehicle and gasoline vehicles, to create a gasoline vehicle, it causes about 9% GHG to create that vehicle. Versus over on the, and that's manufacturing and end of life. In other words, disposing of the vehicle, right? If you look over at the EV side of it, the battery takes 18%. Now, when you look at fuel to charge the vehicle, you're looking at 65%, which is the majority of what the electric car is using. 65% of GHGs for that vehicle, which is pushing it over 100 now, or close to 100, excuse me, pushing it close to 100%, 100 GHGs. And this is probably not making a lot of sense, but you can go look at this. But what I'm saying is, yes, if you look at the creation of the battery, it's more than creating the car. It's more. And then when you look at the what they call feedstock and fuel, which for electric cars is to produce the electricity, is 65% versus a car is 17%. The biggest difference, though, is when you, and then you've got manufacturing, end of life. We talked about that, 17%, 9%, but you have to add an extra 18% for the EV. The biggest difference here is the life of the vehicle in use. Well, we know that an electric car in use is not doing anything because it's just charging, and typically it's going to be charging at home. And that can be powered in multiple ways. And we've already discussed that. That's only 65%, which is a high number, but still compared to, it's a high number compared to the way we get the fuel for a regular car. But you're looking at 74% that an EV does not use, that a car does use, of the vehicle actually being driven, which pushes it almost to 400 GHGs. That's a lot, folks. I mean, that's it's insane to look at it. Now, granted, everyone's driving habits are different, but we're basing this all on the same numbers, that 85% of us only drive 50 miles or less a day. So based off of those numbers, it's just simple math. With the EV not doing anything to contribute to GHG emissions when being driven, it's a smaller footprint. It's about half, if you look here. And I don't know that they would say that, but it's pretty close to half of what a car does. So it is a considerable difference. And I get it, everyone drives differently. But when you see it next to each other like that, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's something that we definitely at least have to take into consideration.